We're in Genesis chapter 24 tonight, and nearly halfway through the book of Genesis. We've traveled well over 1,500 years in the past several weeks here, in the past few months. And it's amazing how much of the Bible is spent on small portions of time, and how little of it is spent on large portions of time. History books that recorded 1,500 years worth of time would be huge, and yet the book of Genesis covers nearly 2,000 years in just 50 chapters, just a few pages, and it covers all of that time period. We've been studying about Abraham and learning about the father of the faithful and his growth and his changes that he had to make in his life to become what God wanted him to be. And it seems he has matured now that he's well over 140 years old. He's finally mature. And his faith is finally what it ought to be. But sometimes the same is true with us. Sometimes we are kind of slow about growing up in the things that God wants us to do. And the fact that Abraham had some of those same struggles can be an encouragement to us. Verse 1 of chapter 24 says, Abraham was old and well stricken in age. Doesn't give us the exact age that he is here, but we know this is sometime after Sarah had died, and she was 127 when she died in the last chapter, so he would have been 137 at that time, and it's sometime after that, and sometime before he died when he was 175. So sometime in between those two times we now have this recording. And Abraham recognizes that his son, who's now about 40 years old, needs a wife. And because of his growth and his understanding of God and his understanding of the difference between the living God and the idols that all of the people around him are worshiping, he doesn't want his son to marry one of these idolatrous people around him. He doesn't want his son to marry one of the Canaanites. And I always encourage the young people in the church today as well, don't marry the Canaanites. They're out there all around us. The people of this world who are not God's people, beware of them. They are dangerous to your soul. How many people do we know of who were raised up in the church and taught how to be good, faithful Christians, but they wound up in a relationship with someone who was not a Christian, and that relationship pulled them away? Sometimes it's friends, and sometimes it may even be relatives, but sometimes and many times is the case where a spouse leads someone away from Christ, and what a dangerous thing that is. But Abraham didn't want his son marrying any of the people around him. And so he calls his servant, the oldest servant in his house. This perhaps is the Eliezer that was going to be his heir before Isaac was born. Possibly him, or possibly even Eliezer's father, maybe. Don't know, he's not given a name. But it said that this servant was the oldest servant he'd had, the one who'd been over everything. He's the highest ranking servant. He's the servant that's over all that he has. This is a very trustworthy servant. And he says then, put your hand under my thigh, and I'll make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and of earth, that my son shall not have a wife of the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell. We might think that kind of an odd custom. It's interesting, as we look back and read these things, there are many things that are very different from the way we would do it. We would think it very odd if a man asked another man to put his hand under his thigh. Now, that's kind of strange. And yet that was the custom of the day. That was similar to what we have in, I guess they still do it in some courts anyway, where someone puts their hand on the Bible and raises their hand up and, I swear to tell the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth and so forth. It's similar to that. This was a way of securing a promise, making it stronger than just saying, oh yes, I will. This was swearing. This was an oath. And so he made him swear that he wasn't going to get a daughter from the Canaanites to marry Isaac. He wants someone special. And so he says, what I want you to do in verse 4 is you go back to my country, to my kindred, my family, my kin folks, and you get a wife from there. Some people said, well, Abraham and Isaac, they must have been from Arkansas because of all this intermarrying they get in their families. But my parents are from Arkansas. They weren't related, though. But you know, it is so we pick on folks sometimes from being from a certain place for a certain thing. But Abraham said, you know, I want someone who has a good upbringing, somebody whose family I know, and so go back to my home country, find somebody from among my kin folks. Well, even among his kin folks, there weren't a lot of people who were worshipers of God. In fact, Abraham seems to really be the only one, him and his children. His father's household, he had to leave that house and leave the idolatry of his father's house behind to come follow after the Lord and go where the Lord told him to go. But he says for his servant to go get a wife from there and bring her back. And so the servant then has some questions. You know, that's a pretty big task. So you got to have some questions about that to make sure you get the job done right. The servant says, what if she won't come? Should I take your son back there? Abraham says, no, don't do that. God told me to come out of that land and that he was going to give me and my descendants this land. Don't take him back to that land. I don't want him going back there. I want you to get her and bring her here. And so okay, well, what if she's not going to come, though? And so Abraham says, if she's not willing to follow you, if she won't come with you, then you're cleared. So you find the woman, you talk to, you ask her, and if she won't come, then you're released from your oath. You've done what you were supposed to do. If she won't come, that's not your fault. That's not your problem. And so the servant swore to all those things, and then he took 10 camels of the camels that Abraham had and took the goods that he needed for the journey, and he went on his way, and he went back into Mesopotamia, back toward the land of the Chaldees, which is where Abraham had come from, and he stopped at the city of Nahor. And Nahor, of course, was one of Abraham's brothers. There was Abram, Nahor, and Haran, who was Lot's father. Haran, of course, had been dead for a good long while now. But Nahor and Abraham were still alive. And so Nahor had his own city, and all of his family lived there nearby. So when he came to that city, then verse 11 tells us that he got the camels to kneel down by the well, and he does a very wise thing, that anyone who's considering someone who's going to be a spouse for life ought to do. He prays. Now, I don't know if this servant believed in God the way that Abraham did. He'd certainly been a part of this household for a long time. I don't know if he was a follower of God, but he had seen Abraham following God. I'm sure he had noticed some changes in the way Abraham did things and noticed the difference in Abraham's household and that they didn't have idols like the other households. And so I don't know how much faith he had, but he has a prayer to say to God. And he asks God that here he is by this well, and he says, I'm going to basically let it be in your hands. He says, just let it happen this way, that when one of the young ladies comes out here to draw water, which is what the young ladies did at evening time to take water back to their homes, and he says, when I say to her, let down your pitcher so that I can have a drink, that wouldn't have been an uncommon thing. If there was a traveler by the well, they'd often say something similar to that. So that wouldn't be unusual, and often they would give them a drink. That was a common courtesy at that time as well. But he says, when I say that, then if she says, okay, drink, and I'll give your camels drink also. He said, let that one that says that, let that one be the one that you've chosen for Isaac. And so he leaves it in God's hands. You pick her. I'm going to say, these are the guidelines. This is how I'm going to know which one you want me to have for Isaac. And so that was his plan. And he's waiting there by the well then for someone to come. And notice it says that before he was done speaking, is God quick to answer prayer? Sure he is. Jesus, speaking of his Father, talks about how his Father's a good Father. He'll give good things to those that ask him. Just like a father who, if his son asks him for bread, he's not going to give him a stone. If he asks for a fish, he's not going to give him a serpent. And God's a good Father like that. If you ask him for good things, he's going to give you good things. Sometimes, however, we don't ask God about these kinds of things because we want what we want, even if it's not what's good for us sometimes. But he, notice, asked for the woman that comes, that's the one that's chosen. He has something he's looking for in this woman. Notice he didn't say, you know, let me notice how beautiful she is. She was a beautiful woman, apparently. But he didn't say that. He didn't say, you know, I want one that's just this certain age. He didn't say, I want one that's got a certain educational level or that's, you know, got brown hair or blonde hair. He wasn't specific about those things. But notice what he did say. He said, I want the one who, when I ask her for a drink of water, and she sees me here with these 10 camels. You know how much a camel can drink? She's going to say, okay, I'll give you a drink, and I'm going to draw water for your camels. He's looking for a woman who's willing to work. He's looking for a woman who's a hard worker. Industrious. Not scared away by a hard task. I don't know what this particular well he was by was like, but I have seen pictures of some of those wells back in those days. And a lot of times they would have a large area around that cistern, and they have steps going down the inside, around the wall of it, down to where the water level was. And they would go down those steps and get a pitcher of water and come back up those steps. I don't know what size pitcher she had, but I do know camels can drink some water. She had to make several trips up and down to get that water up there for those camels. Rebecca was not a woman who was scared of a little hard work, or a lot of hard work, as the case may be. And so he was not looking for someone. He didn't care about how beautiful she was or how smart she was. He wanted someone who was industrious. Because she's going to be the wife of a man who's going to inherit great wealth, and with great wealth comes great responsibility. There's going to be a lot that they're going to have to do, and so she can't be lazy. And so that's one of the things that he looks for in this wife. Well, as soon... Now the Bible says, God Himself speaking, says, before they call, I will answer. And before they ask me, I will hear. And it's almost like He did that with Abraham's servant here. He's already got the answer coming before this fellow even finishes his prayer. And here she comes. Rebecca comes to the well. And he asks her for a drink of water. And she says, drink. And she let down her pitcher. And then when she'd finished giving him a drink, she said, I'll draw water for your camels also. That's just what he had asked God to be the sign for him that this was the right one. And so she did that. And she got those camels filled up with water. And I can only imagine how much they drank. She says, I'll draw water for thy camels until they have done drinking. She didn't just say, I'll give them eat one pitcher each. She said, I'm going to give them water until they're done drinking. So she didn't put a limit on how much she was willing to do. And she did all that. And she emptied her pitcher and ran to the well to draw water and drew the water for all his camels. And verse 21 then says, he wondered at her. He was amazed. You know, it is something how many times people ask God something in prayer and then they're surprised when he answers it. And we shouldn't be surprised when God's faithful and answers the prayers like He said He would. And yet so many times we're surprised. But He's standing there and He's marveling at this situation. And then He wonders, okay, is my journey going to be prosperous? Okay, this is the woman, but now He's still got is she going to come back with me? That was the question he asked Abram. What if she won't come back? Well, if this is the right woman, this is the one that I asked God about, but now, is my journey going to be prosperous? And I don't know what he expected. He may have expected that he was going to have to search high and low, hill and dale, knock on every door of every house before he could find the right one. Kind of like the prince in the story of Cinderella, where he went around with that glass slipper to try it on every woman's foot in the whole kingdom before he finally found the right one. I don't know what he expected. But he's surprised that here he is. He just got here. He just sat down to the well. He just got the camels down there. And then here she comes before he even finishes asking. And is this the one? Is it going to be this easy? Well, sometimes God works things out easier than we think they would be. Well, he explains to her who he is. Verse 26 says he worshipped the Lord after he had asked her who she was, and she told him, said, I'm the daughter of Bethuel, who was the son of Milcah that she bore to Nahor. And those children are mentioned, the eight that did milk a bear, or something of that. Or maybe they did milk a boar. I don't know. They milked some kind of animal. But Milcah had some children for Nahor. There were eight of them, and Bethuel was one of them. And he had at least two children that we know of, Rebekah and her brother named Laban. And we'll read more about Laban later when Jacob is looking for a wife. But here is Rebekah, and she explains, you know, I'm Nahor's granddaughter, in essence, is what she says. And he's just excited. He's, wow, I found the right spot. Here I am, finding one of Abraham's little nieces. Just what he wanted me to find, one of his kinfolk. And here I am, I found it. And he worships God. And then he said, blessed be the Lord God of my master Abraham. The Lord led me to the house of my master's brethren. How fortunate. You know, it's a big country, and it wasn't like Abraham gave him an address that he could put in his GPS to find his family's home. Things were a little different back then. You realize that it's just been a little while ago that Abraham heard through the grapevine, back at the end of chapter 22, that Abraham found out that Nahor had children. Well, Nahor didn't just have children, he's got grandchildren. Grandchildren that are already grown up enough that she's about to be one to get married. And yet Abraham had just heard that she had children. You know, they didn't have cell phones or even landline phones. They didn't have email or even a post office where they could send a letter. And they were hundreds of miles apart. They didn't know what was going on in each other's lives very much. And so this was quite a fortunate incident for him. God had smiled on him to bring him to this. And when she heard about that, she ran back home to her mother's house and she told them all those things. And Laban came out to meet the man, and he saw the earring that the man had given her and the bracelet, gifts from Abraham and Isaac for her. And he comes out to the man and he brings him to the house and he gives him things that the camels need, straw and so forth, and comes in, gives him water to wash his feet and also the feet of the men who were with him. This servant didn't make this big old long trek with 10 camels and just himself. He brought some other servants with him as well. And so he explains again to them. They said, well, come on, let's eat something. You know, you've had a long journey. You're tired. You're hungry. Let's eat something. He said, before I eat, I've got to tell you why I'm here. This isn't just a social visit. I didn't just come to bring you news of how Abraham's doing. I came for a specific purpose. And he said, I'm not going to eat until I tell you. And so then he tells the story that we saw at the beginning of the conversation between him and Abraham about who he was supposed to get for Isaac to marry, and all about whether she'd come with him and so forth. And then he asked them, down in verse number 48, he says, you know, I worship because I found the right place. I got to my master's brother's daughter here, just who I was looking for. And then he says, if you will deal kindly with me and truly with my master, tell me. And if not, then I'll go somewhere else. I'll go try to find somebody else for my master's son. And so Laban, Rebekah's brother, and her father, Bethuel, said, oh, this thing proceeds from the Lord. We can't control this. God's in control of this situation. Now, again, we don't know how much they believed in the Lord. We know that Laban himself was an idolater. And we know that later on we'll see that because one of his daughters stole the household gods when they were leaving. They stole the idols. So we know that Laban at least had worshipped some idols, and probably he learned that from his own father Bethuel. It certainly was the case that Abraham's family was not all worshippers of God. So Abraham, like a lot of us, had kinfolks who didn't believe the same thing he believed, who didn't follow the same God that he followed or worshipped in the same way that he did. But they said, Rebekah's here, take her and go, and let her be the wife of your master's son, as the Lord has spoken. And so he heard those words and he worshipped the Lord again. This servant is a very worshipful individual. He's very honoring to God. And so then he brought out some jewels, silver and gold, clothing, and gave them all to Rebekah, gave the brother and her mother all these various things, precious things, it says. And then he ate and he drank, he and all the men that were with him. They stayed there that night. And they rose up in the morning and he said, okay, let me go. Send me back to my master. And they said, well, wait a minute. Let her stay here a few days. That's kind of a... Here yesterday we had no idea that she'd be getting married anytime soon, and then you show up and now you want to take her away the very next day. Let her stay a few days, at least 10 days or so. And he says, don't stop me. Don't hinder me. The Lord's prospered me. Send me away. And they said, well, we'll call her and ask her what she wants to do. I want you to think about this young lady, Rebekah. Don't know exactly how old she is, but at any age, for that matter, can you imagine being asked to leave everything you've ever known with a total stranger that you just met yesterday, to go hundreds of miles away, to marry someone you've never met? That's kind of a frightening prospect for us, for anyone at any age to do that. That's a scary thing. And yet that's what they're going to ask her if she's willing to do. Let me tell you, Rebekah is a courageous young lady. She wasn't afraid. When they called her and asked her, she said, let's go. I'll go. I'm ready. And so they sent her away. They sent her nurse with her, and apparently some other servants to be with her as well. Verse 61 says, Rebekah arose and her damsels, and they rode upon the camels and followed the man. So she had some other servants that were with her, as well as her nursemaid, and they were ready to go. They blessed Rebekah in verse 60. They said, you're our sister, but be the mother of thousands of millions, and let your seed possess the gate of those which hate them. They blessed her and sent her away. As far as we know, Rebekah never gets to see her family again. When the Bible talked about back in Genesis, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, or in this case, the woman leaving her father and mother, and leave and cleave. They really did. They left. And they went away. And they didn't even get to see each other again. We would think, oh, how horrible. How different our society is from theirs. The thought even, we would think how horrible for somebody to marry somebody they've never met. Just this idea of an arranged marriage, of going and picking somebody out and bringing them and putting them together. And we think, well, that'll never work. They don't know each other. How will they ever get along? And yet, Isaac and Rebecca, as far as we know, they never got divorced. Not like 50% of the marriages in this country where we let people pick their own. Kind of makes you wonder which way really works better in the long run. But that was the way that this worked out. And Rebecca went, and as they were coming in, Isaac was coming from one of the wells, and he went out to meditate in the field around the evening time. He looked up, he saw the camels were coming. She looked up, and she saw Isaac. She got off of the camel and asked the servant, who's that fellow over there? And the servant said, well, that's my master. That's Isaac. That's the one that you're going to marry. So she took off her veil and she covered herself. And then the servant came and found Isaac and told him what all had happened. And Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent, and he took Rebekah and she became his wife. Not much of a wedding ceremony, was it? No pretty flowers, no bridesmaids' dresses, no beautiful hairdos. Nancy was telling me yesterday she's busy all day with a wedding, fixing hair for a wedding. You know, none of that. No fanfare. No big reception, no beautiful wedding cake. He just married her. I guess they did kind of like the justice of the peace thing that people do. But that was their custom. That was the way that they did things in their day and time. And she became his wife, and he loved her. And Isaac was comforted after his mother's death, it says. But he loved her. He'd never met her before. Well, how could you love somebody you never met? Wouldn't they have differences of personality? Quite likely. But he loved her because she was his wife. And I'm going to guess that she loved him too because he was her husband. Sometimes in our country, in our society, we think of love as a gushy, ushy, bubbly, happy feeling that we have when we're around somebody. But the Bible describes love a little differently than that. The Bible describes love as being a decision we make to look out for someone else's good before our own. To put someone else's interests before our own. To put someone else's needs above our own. To make sacrifices of our own will and our own desires for someone else. That's not something that we fall into and out of, according to the Bible. Love is a decision that we make, and then that decision dictates the actions that we carry out. And sometimes, unfortunately, people throw the word love around very carelessly. The old saying, I love you, I love you, I love you, I do, but don't get excited, I love ice cream too. We sometimes use love to describe anything that we enjoy, anything we like, anything that we think is pleasant in any way. And yet that's not the kind of love that God describes. It's not the kind of love He has for us. Well, if the love that God had for us was based on feelings, we'd all be in big trouble. Because we have all done things that I'm sure would have hurt His feelings. If He allowed that, He would have fallen out of love with us and with the world a long time ago. His love is the kind that says, I want what's best for you regardless of how you feel or treat me. I'm going to do what's right toward you anyway. And Isaac loved Rebecca. He took her as his wife, and it's a good thing for her that he did. She would have been a stranger in a strange land, homeless, without any family, if it had not been for the love of Isaac. To take her in, to make her his wife, and then to protect her and provide for her for the rest of her life. Certainly a different culture. certainly a different way of doing things than we do today. But you know, there was another who took a bride. Jesus Christ came from heaven. God had chosen, predestined, the Bible even says, those who were going to be His bride. The church was going to be His bride. He had predestined what individuals would make up that body that was going to be the bride of Christ. And that was going to be those who were willing to obey His will. We have a choice. Just like Rebecca did. Rebecca could have said, no, I don't want to go marry him. I don't know who he is. I'd rather marry one of the boys here that I've met before. Now I know where he lives and I know more about... But she was willing to go. We, each and every one of us, those who are Christians, have made that decision. I'm going to be married to Christ. I'm going to be a part of that bride of Christ. I'm going to be dedicated to Him, devoted to Him for life. Because that's the way God intends marriage to be, for life. There are some here today who maybe haven't made that decision. They're still kind of up in the air, wondering, well, should I devote my life to Christ? Should I say, I'll go, like Rebecca did? Or should I, well, just, I want to have my freedom, be single a little while longer. I don't want to be devoted and dedicated and bound to someone just yet. Christ begs us to come and be with Him, to love Him as He loves us. And He, like Isaac, prepared and protected and provided for Rebecca. Christ is prepared and is willing to protect us and provide for us and to bring us home with Him one day. But we've got to accept His invitation. We've got to say yes. We've got to say, I do. I will. I'll go. Sometimes, however, in relationships, a couple kind of grows apart. Perhaps tonight you feel like you've grown apart from the Lord just a little bit. Maybe you're not as close to Jesus as you once were. You can get that closeness back. He wants it. He's ready for it, waiting for it. He wants to have the kind of relationship that will be the best that you'll ever have. But He can't have that relationship without you. You've got to do your share and come to Him and bring Him your all. You've got to be honest with Him about the things you've done and come back to Him and admit to Him the ways you've hurt Him. He'll accept you back. And He'll welcome you back home with open arms. If tonight you have a need to respond to the invitation for any reason, please do so as we stand and as we sing.